Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, September 17th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
a rapid recovery of oil production looks unlikely after the attack in Saudi Arabia.
Geopolitical tensions and uncertainty continue to weigh on global equities.
WeWork signals a significant delay to its IPO plans.
And auto workers enter day two of their strike against GM.
Iran's supreme leader says there will be no talks with the U.S. at any level, plus an ex-Trump campaign manager today is scheduled before the House Judiciary Committee. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Jets are 0-2. They lost the Monday night game to Cleveland. The Giants hinted they might bench Eli Manning. The Mets lost at Colorado.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Portfolio Analyst, powered by Interactive Brokers. Savvy investors use Portfolio Analyst to create a consolidated view of their finances and check the health of their complete financial portfolio. Download for free at ibkr.com/PA.
U.S. futures and European shares are struggling for direction this morning. 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures now down about 4 points. Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ futures down 15. The DAX in Germany is down 0.3%. CAC in Paris down less than 0.1%. And the FTSE 100 is up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 1.83%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.74%. COMEX gold down 0.4%. $5.90 at 15.05.60 an ounce. The euro 1.1016 against the dollar. The yen 108.23. Nathan.
Karen, we begin in the Middle East, where Saudi Aramco is growing less optimistic of a rapid recovery in oil production after the weekend attack. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Riyad Hamadi.
There might be some initial recovery there, or at least of some of the lost production. But to recover all of it, it looks like may take weeks, if not months, to fix completely. Although, again, we don't really have official word. And I think the Saudis are currently assessing the damage to know more definitively where that takes us. The
sources tell us Aramco is notifying customers some crude deliveries for early October will be delayed to later in the month. Sarah Emerson is an analyst at ESAI Energy.
There was this expectation the Saudi Energy Ministry would give an update on Tuesday, and we have heard nothing. So I think the market is still sort of absorbing this. I would not be at all surprised to see prices go up from $68 Brent.
Well, right now, Brent's at $67.97 a barrel. That's down $1.05 or 1.5%, while West Texas Intermediate's down 1.6% or 99 cents at $61.91.
In Asia, it was another down day for stocks as investors gauge implications from that strike in Saudi Arabia. And Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. China's yuan dropped and Chinese and Hong Kong equities slid in the wake of the country's central bank refraining from lowering one of its interest rates. However, Japan's topics rose as energy stocks played catch-up to Monday's gains as Japanese traders returned from the three-day weekend. Here in Singapore, exports contracted for a sixth straight month in August from a year earlier. However, the 8.9% drop in non-oil exports was better than expected thanks to demand from China, the only market to buy more from the city-state last month. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Salih, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thanks. In the UK today, Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Brexit strategy is on trial at Britain's highest court. We get the very latest live from Bloomberg Daybreak Eurobanker Roger Hearing in London. Roger, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Today sees the beginning of one of the most important cases ever to come before the UK Supreme Court. The justices are being asked to rule on appeals from two different legal systems. One case in which English judges decided they did not have the right to rule on Boris Johnson's suspension of Parliament. And one in which Scotland's judges decided they did, and that his action was unlawful. The Supreme Court's judgment could define the limits of political and judicial power in the UK, and perhaps the outcome of Brexit too. The stakes couldn't be higher. Live in London, I'm Roger Hearing, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Roger, thank you. Turning to corporate news now, WeWork is signaling a delay to its IPO. The company is now targeting a listing by the end of the year as concerns mount over valuation and business prospects. Santosh Rao is head of research at Manhattan Venture Partners.
I think it should never have been priced at $47 billion. I think just in January of 2019, SoftBank bought back shares of employees at $20 billion. So it's in the $20 to $25 billion. It can be justified, provided they clear out the corporate governance issues and give more clarity in terms of their financials.
WeWork had originally planned to begin its pitch to investors as soon as this week.
The United Auto Workers Union is entering day two of its strike against General Motors, and its top negotiator says the sides remain far apart. We get more from Bloomberg's David Welch in Detroit.
Sticking points here for what's going to happen with temporary workers. About 7% of GM's workforce is temporary workers. The union wants to see less of it. They want to see a path to permanent employment for those people. They're far apart on that issue. And then they have these entry-level wages for workers, which are less than $20 an hour. The top workers make $30 an hour. The union wants a much shorter path to get to that top wage. So just not a lot of wiggle room, and someone's going to have to compromise to get a deal.
Shares of GM fell 4% yesterday. The union's vice president says just 2% of 1,000 outstanding proposals have been settled.
In Luxembourg today, Apple's $14 billion battle with the EU heads to the bloc's second highest court. Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo is there and brings us the very latest.
It's a high-stakes legal battle between the European Commission, the Irish government, and American tech giant Apple. The two of them have appealed a decision by the European Commission, which forced Apple to pay back 13 billion euros in overdue tax. The verdict could have serious implications for the way American multinationals operate in Europe, and it could embolden the European Commission's tough approach when it comes to American tech. In Luxembourg, Maria Tadeo, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Maria. And as big tech finds itself under pressure from regulators around the world, Bill Gates says breaking up these companies is not the answer. The former Microsoft CEO spoke with Bloomberg's Eric Schatzker in Seattle.
If there's a way the company's behaving that you want to get rid of, then, you know, you should just say, okay, that's a banned behavior.
Stop
just splitting the company in two and having two people doing the bad thing, you know, that doesn't seem like a solution.
Microsoft is no stranger to regulatory scrutiny, but right now it finds itself as one of the only big tech companies not under the microscope. S&P futures are lower by almost 4 points now. Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ futures down 15 points. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And it's 6:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. It may be the season of diplomacy in New York, but U.S. and Iranian leaders only seem to be talking at each other, not to each other. Bloomberg's Bob Moon in New York reports.
Middle East tensions are rising just as world leaders prepare to gather for the 74th session of the United Nations General Assembly, and as U.S. Senate leader Mitch McConnell calls for the world to respond to a, quote, reckless attack.
I hope our international partners will join us in imposing consequences on Tehran.
The big U.N. meetings aren't set to begin until next week, but Iran is now ruling out any chance that its leader might meet with President Trump then, declaring that stopping all sanctions is an indispensable precondition for constructive diplomacy. Trump, in turn, ruled that out as he spoke to reporters.
These sanctions are not going to be taken off.
Trump said he would be talking to the Saudis about the situation. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump was on the campaign trail last night in New Mexico. The president reacted to the New York Times report on Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, leading to new calls for his impeachment on Capitol Hill.
I call for the resignation of everybody at the New York Times involved in the Kavanaugh smear story.
The president, speaking in Rio Rancho, says every major Democrat wants to abolish all production of oil and natural gas. Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren spoke before an estimated crowd of about 20,000 people in New York City's Washington Square Park. Warren called for big structural change.
There's a lot at stake in this election. And I know people are scared. But we can't choose a candidate we don't believe in just because we're too scared to do anything else.
Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee are preparing to hold their first official hearing in what they are calling an impeachment investigation. President Trump's former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, is scheduled to appear today to discuss the special counsel's report on Russia election interference. President Trump said his administration will enter into an initial trade accord over tariffs with Japan in the coming weeks. Meanwhile, Tokyo warned any final deal must include assurances that Washington won't slap new tariffs on $50 billion of Japanese auto exports. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the Jets knew it would be hard enough to win last night without starting quarterback Sam Darnold. He's got mono, may miss a couple of months. But then the backup QB, Trevor Siemian, took a late hit from Myles Garrett, limped off with an injured ankle. So the third stringer, Luke Falk, had to come in and make his NFL debut. It was no contest against a desperate Cleveland team that was picked to win the division, but who lost its opener by 30. The Browns beat the Jets by 20. 23-3. Odell Beckham back at MetLife reminded Giants fans of what he can do. He had one of his patented one-handed catches in the first half. He had an 89-yard touchdown, the only score of the second half. Jets are 0-2. Their coach is Adam Gase.
We got to get better at what we're doing. We can play so much better than this, and the details of what's going on in all three phases can get a lot better, and it's going to have to. I mean, we got a long ways to go. Got a lot of practice. Got a lot of games. It's just going back to what we started doing in the spring and making sure we're executing that way.
They need to get better, but Sunday they have to play at New England. The Giants are also 0-2, and their coach Pat Shurmur was asked point blank yesterday, will Eli Manning be his starting quarterback Sunday at Tampa Bay? And he refused to confirm that, so they're at least considering making the move. There was always a matter of not if, but when. Replacing the 38-year-old Manning with the rookie Daniel Jones, the final answer should come tomorrow. The Mets' playoff hopes, which seemed possible just a week ago, not so much now. After the sweep of Arizona, they've lost 3 of 4. They had a 4-1 lead at Colorado and then lost 9-4 as Steven Matz gave it all away in the fourth inning. The two teams the Mets are chasing for that wild card spot, the Cubs and Brewers, both won. Yankees back home tonight for the Angels. It'll be the season debut on the mound for Luis Severino. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. And you can call this a goal for hockey fans. There will be NHL action for the next three seasons without the threat of a work stoppage. Players Association says it won't opt out of the current collective bargaining agreement. Combined with the owner's decision earlier this month not to trigger their opt-out clause, the current CBA remains in effect till 2022 as the sides continue to work on an extension. This is Bloomberg. Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit burdenllp.com. Burden Accountants and Advisors. They listen, they solve, they do.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, 6:17 on Wall Street. And Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check of the latest headlines with Ainsley Thompson in the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Ainsley, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. WeWork is delaying its IPO as concerns mount over its valuation and business prospects. The company says it expects to complete the offering this year. Saudi Aramco may not fully restore output before year end. That's according to Citigroup, which says up to 2.5 million barrels a day could remain offline until then. The US struck a trade deal with Japan. According to reports, the agreement says the US will not hike tariffs on Japanese cars, while Tokyo will cut duties on American wine. And we get US industrial production data today. Economists say output probably rose 0.2% in August, retracing July's decline. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen?
All right, Ainsley, thank you. S&P futures are down 3 points. Dow futures down 39. NASDAQ futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 1.82%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.74%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.5% or 97 cents at $61.93 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.4% or $5.70 at $15.05.80 an ounce. The euro, 1.1013 against the dollar. The British pound, 1.2405. And the yen, 108.19. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the Islamic Republic Supreme Leader says Iran won't negotiate with the U.S. on any level, neither in New York or anywhere else. On Iranian state TV, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says sometimes they say negotiations without any precondition and sometimes with 12 conditions. The remarks are apparently meant to end all speculation about a U.S.-Iran meeting at the U.N. later this month in New York. Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee are preparing to hold their first official hearing in what they are calling an impeachment investigation. Ex-Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski is scheduled to appear. In the NFL, the Jets lost to the Browns last night 23-3. In baseball, the Mets lost along with the A's, Orioles, and Nationals. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 6:20 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Michael Hewson is back with us this morning, Chief Market Analyst at CMC Markets. Nice, as always, to talk with you, Michael, as we continue to look for clarity regarding the weekend drone attack on the Saudi oil facilities. How long do you expect this to potentially be a headwind for the market broadly?
Yeah, I think, good morning, Nathan. This could take a while to pan out. First and foremost, we need to know how much production capacity has been lost in the short to medium term. And we are really talking about the potential for 5% of global output capacity going forward. And I think the big question is, can anyone else make up any of the shortfall if, as expected, the worst case scenario plays out? At the moment, we are holding slightly below the highs. I think US crude is down around about 1.5%, which is a fairly small amount when you consider the rally that we saw yesterday. But I think we also need to put this rise in prices in context. Yes, it's a big one-day rise, but we're still well below the levels that we were in October last year when WTI was around about $75, $76 a barrel. And Brent crude was well above $80 a barrel. So I think we've got quite a way to go before we start to hit a pain trade where it hurts US consumers and global consumers more generally. I think we do have to be concerned about a potential retaliation. At the moment, I don't think there appears to be any willingness to go down that road. And I think while we continue to look at it from that point of view, I think the risk is probably slightly more to the downside than the upside.
What is the risk to energy stocks? What kind of levels could they test?
Energy stocks certainly, I think, could remain. Are we talking stocks as in stockpiles or as in equities?
As in equities.
Okay. They're fairly well underpinned at the moment, but I think if you actually look at how energy stocks have performed over the course of the past 12 months, they haven't been as significantly swayed by big moves up as opposed to big moves down. I think in terms of just oil prices, there's a whole wider range of factors involved when it comes to energy stocks. When I look at BP, when I look at Royal Dutch Shell, when I look at Exxon, they've been posting some fairly decent numbers in recent months despite fairly higher oil prices, and they haven't really been making any significant gains. So I think in terms of energy stocks, it's really difficult to say whether or not you're going to see any significant upside, even if prices do edge a little bit higher.
Want to get your take on WeWork situation here. Mm. The long-awaited initial public offering appears to be keeping investors, potential investors, waiting even longer. Is that a good move?
I think it's an inevitable move, Nathan, if I'm honest with you. When I look at WeWork, I'm sort of reminded of Uber, I'm reminded of Lyft, I'm reminded of Slack. None of these IPOs have done particularly well, and I think there was a big danger if WeWork had pushed ahead with their IPO that they would suffer a similar fate. I mean, I cannot see the rationale for even the lower valuation of $15 billion, even allowing for the fact that SoftBank basically put in $2 billion at the beginning of this year, valuing it at $47 billion. I can't imagine what SoftBank were thinking when they were sort of looking at that type of valuation. I mean, you look at the numbers. This year alone, the company's down just under $900 million. That's 6 months, which suggests that the company could exceed its pre-tax loss of last year of $1.93 billion. And I think marking the IPO price down is probably the worst way to go about it, because essentially we were talking $20 to $25 billion at the beginning of this month. Then it was 15 to 18. Now it's 10 to 12. I think there's a decent chance that they may not be able to get this IPO away at all.
All right, well, real quick answer on this, not to put you on the spot, but where would you value WeWork?
I'd struggle to value it more than $5 billion, to be quite honest with you, because when I look at comparable companies here in the UK, I look at companies like Workspace Group and IWG, and IWG has been in this space quite some time and has got a valuation of £3.5 billion, and it actually makes a profit.
Got to leave it there. Michael Hewson, Chief Market Analyst, CMC Markets. Thank you, as always, for being with us. Futures on Wall Street pointing to a slightly lower open this morning. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Daybreak is brought to you by the new Range Rover Evoque, designed to open your eyes to the possibilities of what's right in your own neighborhood. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for the new Range Rover Evoque. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We are seeing oil stabilize this morning after yesterday's nearly 15% rally. Still, there are concerns about how long it'll take to restore output. Sources tell us Saudi Aramco is notifying customers some crude deliveries for early October will be delayed to later in the month. We get more from Bloomberg's Will Kennedy.
What's clear is that the market has undergone a big shift, that it needs to be higher because 5.7 million barrels are out. We don't know how much of that is coming back anytime soon. It appears from what we understand, the plant is severely damaged and it may take a long time to bring it back. So the market has to adjust to life without that output.
And checking oil now, NYMEX crude oil is down about 1.8% on $1.10 to $61.79 a barrel. Brent is down 1.9% at $67.73.
And the pound is weakening as Boris Johnson prepares to defend his Brexit strategy. The Prime Minister's lawyers head to the UK's highest court today.
WeWork has signaled it's putting off its troubled IPO. The office rental startup says it now expects to complete the share listing by the end of the year.
Now, AB InBev is back on track with the planned IPO of its Asian unit, but it's been scaled back. Bloomberg News has learned the brewer is set to raise up to about $4.9 billion. That's roughly half the earlier target.
On the earnings front, we get results from FedEx today. Here with a preview, Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Forecasts are for the company to post an adjusted profit of $3.16 a share on revenue topping $17 billion. Bloomberg Intelligence says FedEx will have much to discuss in its earnings call. Investors will want updates on the risk from the trade war with China, the pivot away from Amazon.com, and the integration of TNT. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. General Motors and striking United Auto Workers remain far apart in their talks to resolve a strike. That's according to the union's top negotiator. The union's vice president says just 2% of 1,000 outstanding proposals have been settled.
And Thomas Cook Group has filed for Chapter 15 court protection in the U.S. It's part of a broader debt restructuring for the British travel agent. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 4 points. Dow futures down 48. NASDAQ futures down about 15. The DAX in Germany is down almost 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 1.82%, and the yield on the 2-year 1.74%. COMEX Gold is down 0.4%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 6:33 on Wall Street. This news update is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high return income producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net. Here's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Iran won't negotiate with the U.S. on any level, neither in New York or anywhere else. That's according to the Islamic Republic's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. President Donald Trump hasn't ruled out a possible meeting with Iran's President Hassan Rouhani when both are in New York this month for the annual UN General Assembly. Meanwhile, President Trump says it looks as if Iran was behind the bombings of the Saudi Arabian oil facilities. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The president says it's not definitive, but that the U.S. is speaking with all the players in the region and says his administration has pretty clear evidence.
Well, it's looking that way. We'll have some pretty good, we're having some very strong studies done, but it's certainly looking that way at this moment.
He says he doesn't want war, but
talking to a lot of different folks, and we're figuring out what they think. But I will tell you, that was a very large attack, and it could be met with an attack many, many times larger very easily by our country.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says it was Yemen with cause. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The White House is seeking to limit what former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski can tell a House panel pursuing an impeachment inquiry. Lewandowski is scheduled to testify today before the House Judiciary Committee. There is another attempt to get a look at the president's tax returns. According to a person familiar with the matter, prosecutors in New York have subpoenaed 8 years of President Trump's tax returns from Mazars USA, the longtime accounting firm to Trump and the Trump Organization, as part of its investigation into hush money payments. Rallying voters in Democratic-leaning states, President Trump traveled to New Mexico last night. The president in Rio Rancho says Hispanics are in favor of strong border security.
Hispanic Americans, they understand they don't want criminals coming across the border. They don't want people taking their jobs. They want to have that security, and they want the wall. They want the wall.
Voters in Israel are heading to the polls today. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces a challenge from his former military chief, Benny Gantz. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the Jets and Giants will play each other in November, so one of the New York teams is going to get at least one win. Both teams' prospects look bleak right now. The Jets had hopes of being competitive, but two of their best defensive players are injured, and their top two quarterbacks are now out. Sam Darnold's got mono. Trevor Siemian last night hurt his ankle, headed for an MRI. They had to use third stringer Luke Falk. He actually was 20 of 25. They had trouble getting anything going offensively against the Browns. And speaking of the Giants, their old friend was back in Jersey.
First and 10, takes the handoff. He throws to Odell. Beckham Jr. catches in the 25. Foot race to the 30. On the hash mark, the 40. Foot race to the 50. From the 40. On the numbers, the 30. Breaks the tackle, 20. Down the near sideline, 10. 5. Touchdown. Odell Beckham Jr., a quick hitter, 89-yard touchdown pass, Baker Mayfield to Odell Beckham Jr. in his return to MetLife Stadium.
Westwood won the call. Beckham had a one-handed catch in the first half. Browns beat the Jets 23-3, and Sunday the Jets have to visit New England. Defending Super Bowl champs have won two games by a combined 76-3. Giants Sunday have a winnable game at Tampa Bay, but who will be the starting quarterback? Eli Manning has only missed one game since 2004, asked if he expects to get benched for rookie Daniel Jones.
We're 0-2, and you're looking for answers, so I get it, when you draft a guy early and you're not winning games, these are going to come up. So, I just got to keep working and do whatever my job is.
Coach Pat Shermer would not confirm that Eli will start on Sunday. Mets playoff hopes fading fast. Loss of Colorado 9-4 out of 4-1 lead. Rockies put up 6 runs in the fourth inning against Steven Matz. Mets are 5 games out, only 12 games to go. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. 6:37 on Wall Street. And at 9:15 a.m. Wall Street time, we get data on U.S. industrial production. Economists forecast improvement, though the outlook for the rest of the year is in doubt. Here with more is Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
The Fed's July report showed industrial output dropped amid weakness in manufacturing. Bloomberg Economics says a variety of headwinds, trade uncertainty, the dollar, and sluggish global growth are proving persistent. Case in point, the ISM factory index for August pointed to contraction for the first time since 2016. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinny. It's 6:38 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
The recent attack on Saudi Arabia's oil and gas facilities, which has suspended half of the kingdom's processing, is a blow to one of the main arteries of the global economy. The Trump administration should use the United Nations General Assembly this week to marshal a global response. Houthi rebels in Yemen have claimed responsibility for the attack, but there's also suspicion that Shiite militias in Iraq were the culprits, and that they used cruise missiles. In geopolitical terms, it might not make much difference. Both are proxies for Iran, which supplies them with money and materiel. The Trump administration should act swiftly to present proof of Iran's culpability and press for a unified response from the other major world powers. The General Assembly provides the perfect platform from which to do this. Now is the moment to rally the international community to deal with the threat from Iran. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. 6:39 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
Germany's main political parties are coalescing around proposals to increase the cost of flying, potentially doubling the tax on short-haul flights to slash greenhouse gas pollution. Alarmed that the country is falling short of emissions reductions pledges it made under the Paris Agreement on Climate Change, Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats are drawing up policies with their Social Democrat coalition partners and focusing on air transport for some of the most dramatic reductions. A proposal from Merkel's party would double levies on domestic flights. The aim is for ticket prices to more accurately reflect the environmental cost of flying compared to train travel and to make those choices more transparent to consumers. Endorsing the policy on aviation would add to the momentum within Europe to hit the aviation industry with stricter emissions rules. The French government in July unveiled taxes of as much as 18 euros on flights departing France. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
All right, Bob, thank you. S&P futures are lower by 3.5 points right now. Dow futures down 46. NASDAQ futures down almost 14 points. West Texas Intermediate crude oil is down 1.7% or $1.09 at $61.80 a barrel. This is Bloomberg. Coming up, the Bloomberg Morning Call, brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit a Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is 6:47 on Wall Street. Futures this morning are lower. Let's go to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. Modest losses in the U.S. futures right now. Dow futures down 48 points. S&P's dropped 3.5. And NASDAQ futures declined by 15. The U.S. 10-year yield at 1.82%. Gold is a little changed. And Shanghai fell 1.7% overnight after the PBOC kept interest rates on medium-term lending facilities unchanged. European markets are trading mixed this morning, and back in the U.S. on the economic front at 10 o'clock, the NHB Housing Market Index, and at 4 o'clock, net long-term tick flows. On the IPO front, WeWork delayed its IPO as concerns mount over its valuation. And in the chip space, KLA boosted the dividend, is buying back $1 billion in stock, but guided lower for Q3. United Technologies' price target was raised to 154 over at Bernstein. And wrapping things up, Splunk was upgraded to overweight over at JP Morgan. Live from the First Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. To hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump is calling for the resignation of the editors in the New York Times story about accusations, Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and sexual misconduct while in college. Kavanaugh is not commenting on this latest charge, but his defenders call it a political smear, and they point out that the Times article, adapted from a new book out this week, originally omitted a key fact, which editors later added, and the woman couldn't recall the incident. The Islamic Republic Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says Iran won't negotiate with the U.S. on any level. In the NFL, the Jets lost to the Browns last night 23-3. In baseball, the Mets lost along with the A's, Orioles, and Nationals. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg. Yeah, you know that theme. Two Downton Abbey fans will get the chance to live like a Crawley for a night when Highclere Castle, the main filming location for the drama, lists on Airbnb. As a promotion for the film, Downton Abbey, which premieres on Friday, The estate in England is opening its doors for a one-night stay on November 26th. Mm-hmm. Nathan, the first-come, first-served booking will open October 1st, and it will cost £150 or $186.40.
Wow. And that makes pretty much every other Airbnb look pretty shabby by comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, the new drop-in is not comparing to this.
Not quite.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. Why do I want to play cricket all of a sudden? No, I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Yeah, I've heard that show is good.
Oh, yeah, it's very good.
Thank you, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. We're at 6:50 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include President Trump holding fundraisers in California today after last night's rally in New Mexico. The House Judiciary Committee holding a hearing on presidential obstruction of justice. And the president saying the U.S. has reached an initial trade deal on tariffs with Japan. Also making news this morning, the president declaring the U.S. locked and loaded after the drone attack on Saudi oil facilities. For more on the latest in the aftermath of the oil attack, we're joined by Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Kate, good morning. There's some question this morning about what exactly the president means by locked and loaded. Where does the U.S. response stand at this point?
Well, I think that folks are still really on edge or on the lookout for some kind of a military response. And if that is what Trump meant with his tweet on Sunday, I think that's how it was widely interpreted. And certainly, some of the comments in the meantime from other administration officials and from Trump himself haven't necessarily dispelled that theory. We're still sort of looking for Trump has really emphasized that diplomacy hasn't been exhausted yet. He talked a lot about that yesterday. However, I think that people are, just watching closely to see if a military response is in the offing.
Yeah, and there's been some degree of pushback, I think you could say, about the president appearing to defer to Saudi Arabia when it comes to how the U.S. will respond. It's an interesting dynamic we're seeing play out here.
Well, absolutely, because Saudi Arabia is really one of kind of the few issues where Congress, and particularly the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats, are pretty much across the board in opposition to the White House. There's been a lot of criticism of the White House's closeness to Saudi Arabia, particularly after the killing of columnist Jamal Khashoggi last year. And so I think that that's something that is potentially going to cause a lot of political backlash for Trump if he does try to take military action against Iran, and particularly, if he defers to Saudi Arabia or continues to defer to Saudi Arabia in the response, that does risk a political backlash for the president.
I guess the question, though, is whether there would be enough of sufficient political backlash to override a potential veto should it come to that. I mean, we've seen Congress and the White House sort of butt heads in the past when it comes to Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely. And that's where a number of Trump's vetoes have been related to bipartisan congressional resolutions related to Saudi Arabia and taking a harder line on Saudi Arabia than so far the Trump administration has been willing to take. And so I think that as of yet, we haven't seen the support in the Senate to override a presidential veto. And I think that's another dynamic to watch closely here. If there were to be some kind of legislative response to any action that Trump would take in this matter, kind of looking at the initial set of votes and seeing if anybody moves in terms of the amount of support, if we hit a new high watermark for support of that type of a resolution, because it certainly would take that in order to override a presidential veto. There hasn't been enough support so far to do that.
Something else I know you'll be watching very closely this afternoon, the House Judiciary Committee and what is being billed as the first hearing of an impeachment investigation against President Trump.
Yeah, we're going to be hearing from his former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, who's a name that we'll all remember from back in 2016.
Yeah.
He actually had kind of a short-lived stint as Trump's campaign manager, quite a memorable one. And I think it'll be interesting to see how Democrats in particular handle this hearing, because it's one in which a lot of the same types of issues, if they were to move forward with more formal impeachment proceedings, kind of the battle lines are being set out now, in part because the White House is essentially, for example, saying that he can't answer questions about his conversations with the president because of executive privilege, even though he never actually served, Lewandowski never actually served in the executive branch. And so I think that these types of questions about the scope of executive privilege are the sorts of things that, you know, lawmakers and the White House would be grappling over going forward if they do proceed with any kind of impeachment. It's also the same type of thing we've seen them be grappling with when it comes to other types of investigations of the Trump administration.
What specifically is it that the Judiciary Committee wants to hear from Corey Lewandowski? And what are the chances that they get any answers from him, given how loyal he's been to the president in the past?
Well, I think in short, it's unlikely that Lewandowski is going to be, you know, an effusive witness. I think he's probably going to be saying as little as possible when it comes to going beyond anything that was in Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. What Democrats want to see is they're looking into questions about obstruction of justice and whether or not they think that, you know, Lewandowski and his conversations with the president could shed some light on whether or not anyone did obstruct justice when it comes to the Mueller investigation and, you know, other matters.
Given the possibility or the likelihood that Lewandowski doesn't say much, just quickly, I mean, does that raise the prospect for Democrats that they could be open to criticism of just, you know, playing political theater here?
It definitely does. And that's been Republicans' line all along. Republicans all along have said this is just a political exercise meant to make the president look bad ahead of his reelection campaign. And so I would expect that that's going to be, regardless of what Lewandowski says today or doesn't say, I think that's going to be Republicans' message coming out of this hearing.
Well, we will certainly be watching it this afternoon. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, thank you as always. Read more at Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal, and listen to all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. It is 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Blindsided bond traders can't count on Fed dots. I'm Brian Trapatta, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Heading into September, the U.S. Treasury market was signaling dark days ahead for America's economy. Now, just days before the Fed's next interest rate decision, the outlook is remarkably brighter. Bond traders were shocked at the change in sentiment. Yields on 10- and 30-year bonds rose by almost 50 basis points from their lows. The only two comparable moves in the past several years were during the so-called taper tantrum in 2013 and after the presidential election in November 2016. Effectively, traders' thinking comes down to this. Fed Chair Jerome Powell has said nothing to dissuade them from pricing in an interest rate cut this week. But what then? Unfortunately for those looking for some clarity, the Fed's dot plot won't be the guiding light to put them on the right side of the trade. Powell himself has said the path forward is murky at best. That means the market's guess on where interest rates go next is as good as any. I'm Brian Trapatta. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion. Or OPI and Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. S&P futures down 5.5 points now, extending declines. Dow futures down 65. NASDAQ futures down 21. And NYMEX crude oil down 2% on $1.23 to $61.66 a barrel. Brent is down 1.9% at $67.68 a barrel. The euro is at 1.1024 against the dollar. Bloomberg Surveillance straight ahead with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.